The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
You're very welcome back to The Hard Shoulder. Kieran Cuddihy with you until 7 o'clock. And delighted to say that joining me for the Thursday interview this week, Nicola Tallant, Investigations Editor with the Sunday World. Her book, Clash of the Clans, The Rise of the Kinahan Mafia and Boxing's Dirty Secret, has updated chapters, available now, I understand.
God, you could update it every month.
Yeah, you certainly could.
Yeah.
That's the nature of it at the moment. And I'm sure lots of people listening to the podcast as well, Crime World. And like you and your career, they are synonymous with crime and crime reporting. Was that always the plan?
Maybe not the plan, but I kind of got into it very early when I was starting out in journalism. It was the time that Veronica Guerin had been murdered and the Gilligan gang were being brought home to face trial in relation to that. So, you know, the big story of the day was the Special Criminal Court and the Gilligan crew up. And I was sent down on that, very green myself. I just got a bit of a thing for it. And then as the years went on, I suppose I built up a bit of an expertise. If you concentrate on one area of journalism, well, you like to think at my age, you have a bit of an expertise in something. But I liked crime. I went back and did criminology at night and it just went on. And, you know, then you come to a stage that all of a sudden everyone asks you about nothing but gangland.
What did studying criminology, what did that help you with? Well, what tools did that lend you?
I think it's only in recent years I have really properly understood what it did, which was kind of open my mind. I suppose like when you're a young journalist, you're chasing the headlines all the time. You're looking for the front pages nowadays. It would be, you know, a slot on News Talk or whatever. It's not so much the written word only anymore, but, you know, you're chasing the story. And with a newspaper story, you have 1,000 words that you have to tell it all, and it's all factual information. So you don't really get to explore the whys or the hows. And that's really sort of what has evolved, I think, in my career, the kind of the digging deeper to know and to understand really why people end up in court, young guys, 22 years of age, facing life for murder, leaving behind their own children because they have taken up a gun to kill another human being. That fascinates me. Why they get there, how they get there, and what went wrong along the way. And usually, you know, if you do dig a bit, you'll find exactly why. And it's not necessarily just one individual's fault. It's not necessarily that they were born bad. They often, you know, their circumstances will create a kind of a path in life that they feel they can't reverse out of.
And has that meant that you've kind of grown more sympathetic or empathetic, at least, with the perpetrators of the crime?
I think certainly, yeah. I mean, look, I'm also empathetic with victims and always will be, and, you know, continue to always speak to victims and recognise their place in it. But I do think that crime doesn't just come out of nowhere. And, you know, we have a situation at the moment, for example, in Dublin. If you're travelling through Finglas, you might see the place is flooded with guards. There are young guys flying around there being recruited into gangs at 14, and many of them are being handed guns at that age. And how have we come to that? Like, even in my short career, it seems as if things have got incredibly worse and we're facing, you know, it's not getting any better. So where does it go next, you know?
And is that is your genuine reflection, because you could talk to anyone at any point in time and they'll say it's never been as bad as it is now. And often it's just a kind of a sense of hyperbole or a feeling that times in the past were better than they actually were. But you, I suppose, have the evidence to back it up because you've been working in this field. It genuinely is worse, is it?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I just think that it's a bigger problem scale-wise, the amount of teenagers and kids really being drawn into it and seeing it as a career choice, as a lifestyle choice. It's become almost part of their culture. I think lots of things have driven that, including social media. You might notice now that a lot of these feuds are being played out on TikTok, on Snap, you know, on Instagram. There's videos being some young guy's shot dead, and there's videos being put up about how they're threatening to dig him up out of the grave. And I mean, this is sort of real narco territory, real, almost nearly a culture borrowed from the Mexicans. And I think that has very much come into the culture and the lifestyle of it. And it is that now, you know, whereas, look, times were never good in gangland or in people being murdered on the streets. It's not as if you can look back with fondness to something that went before it. But I think that there's no rules now and there's no leaders now and there's no, absolutely nobody standing in to try and mediate. If there's a row, it is settled with a bullet. And, you know, there was also a time, I think, when there was a kind of a general understanding amongst the criminals and the gangs that you didn't go after one another's families. Whereas now that's all changed and that line in the sand has been crossed.
It's interesting because when you're saying that I'm recollections of I was standing outside, maybe you were there outside Portlaoise prison when John Gilligan was released a few years ago. And all of us sitting there in our cars really late at night or early in the morning. You would have the lowdown. Yourselves and others turned up right bang on time. Us gobs were waiting there all night long.
You were young.
And I remember someone, it wasn't you, but you might have as well have had this conversation as well. They were kind of just remarking as you're making small talk, like that Gilligan was coming out into a completely different world. And they said exactly what you're saying. They said, there's young lads out there and they will think nothing, absolutely nothing of killing John Gilligan if they're asked to do it.
That's it. And sure, he was shot very soon afterwards. He survived it miraculously. But yeah, they don't think a guy like John Gilligan could be seen almost as a trophy. You know, you're going to elevate your status if you go for him. You know, people might put a hit on him for the sake of it, just for, you know, popularity sakes or celebrity of it almost. But I think more so it's kind of on the absolute ground level when you see young kids and they're either, they're owing a debt because they've got into, they've held drugs, maybe they've been seized from them. The debts are all, there's nothing on paper in that world, you know. There's no, you don't go to your lawyer and sign anything. So, you know, you could owe, you could be told you owe 30,000. You might not know where the hell that's come from, but that's just an incredible amount of money to have to try and come up with. Even if you did, it could be doubled by the time you come up with it. So instead you're asked to do something or you're asked to hold drugs again or whatever. And you're kind of in and there's no, I think the real problem I see is that there's certainly a feeling that there's no way out with the younger kids. I did a book a couple of years ago with Joey O'Callaghan, which was turned into a podcast, The Witness. And I think he very eloquently tells that sort of grooming process and that feeling of being trapped. And, you know, people aren't actually trapped. There are places they can go, but it's that sense that they don't believe there's somewhere they
can go. Psychologically trapped, and he was that he got the sense and
through fear, Kieran, and that's what actually rules that whole world. And I mean, if you felt fear yourself, you'll know how debilitating it actually is. I mean, that's what it is. It's just, it debilitates your every thought and your movements nearly, and it's that constant fear for themselves and their families. And I don't know whether, you know, I think we failed as a society in showing them a path out of it, maybe, or providing safe places for people like that to go.
And does it rely on people with a skewed sense of morality or no morality at all to exploit the likes of Joey O'Callaghan? Because it's an amazingly told story as well, and how he tells it and you tell it with them, of that exploitation when he sent home from school one day and, you know, fella turns up the house and, you know, offering a kind of a way out, and everything looks great, of course, until it wasn't. Those individuals themselves who are doing that exploiting, were they that young lad once as well?
Yeah, I mean, lots of them would have been, yeah. I mean, Joey's story is unique in so many ways, and Brian Kenny himself, who did initially lure him in and was later convicted of murder, was a unique individual. But there's lots of them out there, and I think that, you know, when you start operating in that world, your morals fade and die. And when that happens, you as an individual, you've no empathy with somebody else. And, you know, a lot of people will go on to groom other kids. I mean, you know, I spoke to you there about Finglas' situation with the, you've heard about the Gucci gang, Mr. Flashy. Yeah. Mr. Flashy, as he's called, feels like he's been around for decades. He's actually not yet 30, and he's already grooming teenage boys under the age of 18 to operate and work for him because they won't be handled in the same way before the courts as somebody older. So that's, it's how quick gangland evolves and how quickly the generations come up. You know, I would be looking at, you know, they're veterans in their 40s, they're veterans in their 50s, and if any of them last their 60s or 70s, they deserve a medal. Yeah. But they are, their generations are coming quick, you know.
Blaming society is kind of as a whole, just it's society's fault, is a cop-out. But there is a societal function in all of this, isn't there? Because you said that they don't feel there's a way out. So I mean, if Mr. Flashy goes to kind of some affluent suburb and says, here's a gun, I want you to do this, the young lad's going to say, you know, it's, he says, well, why would I do this? Why would I get into this life? I can go on and do all these other things. You know, that's kind of a gross simplification.
No,
that's
it's not necessarily, I understand exactly what you mean. I mean, the young lad.
The kind of destitution is why they feel, and poverty is why they feel that there is no choice.
And that's across the world. I mean, crime doesn't grow in affluent societies in the same way as it grows. And, you know, there's that sense of hopelessness and lack of choice. And I remember speaking to a very, very senior criminal some years ago, and he was talking about why he got involved initially in drug dealing, the landings of a particular flat complex. He went on to be quite, you know, high up enough in the Kinahan mob. But he was describing it. And as a teenager, he was going back to how he felt at the time. And he felt that he had two choices in life. And one was to become a drug addict, and the other choice was to become a drug dealer. And he chose to become a drug dealer because he preferred the look, the runners, the cars, the thought of having money in his pocket, rather than, you know, sidling up in the morning desperate for a fix. And he didn't just have two choices, because we do have an education system in this country which is free for everybody, a health system, etc. You know, we're actually a very rich, affluent country. But that's how he felt, and that's how we failed a lot of people like him.
And given the lack of scruples, as you said, not to suggest that, you know, if we go back to the time of Gilligan's and before, that they were kind of, that they had this rich moral code. But given the lack of scruples, I mean, does it make you nervous about your coverage, that you put yourself in harm's way?
Well, most of the time it's kind of accepted that there is coverage of it. Most of the time, sometimes there can be points in time when, you know, all journalists working in the crime beat, threats will come in and they're handled, you know, individually. You know, look, journalists, crime journalists in particular, aren't like ordinary citizens. We do get the backing of, if anything should come to my door, I have the backing of a huge media company I work for. I have the backing of the police, and I have the backing of the government, really. I mean, let's be realistic about it. I'm not a victim. Somebody out there living in a community who's been threatened by thugs brandishing weapons, taking cocaine, you know, and steroids, who are highly volatile, they don't have any protections, really. And they are the real victims, the people living in the communities. So I don't ever like to sort of, you know, dwell on any of that stuff, because I just don't think that we should see ourselves as that, as victims of crime.
But you don't like to dwell on it. I wonder, have ever any members of your family ever said, oh, Nicola, like, I'm not sure about this. You know what I mean? We're getting these letters, there's phone calls, there's, you know, Gardaí parked up outside the door.
You sort of like, sometimes, look, when things, you know, get a bit hairy, you do question, I do question what I'm doing, and it sort of passes, like everything passes. And, you know, there's plenty of people working in the world of crime around it that are, you know, working criminal lawyers. You have the judiciary, you have people in the ambulance services, the police. Lots of people do work, kind of come up close and personal with people involved in the criminal underworld, and that's just the way life works. And I don't really see it as any different. You know, be honest, sometimes some of these young guys in particular love being on the front page of the Sunday World. Yeah. They like it. It's like their Hello magazine.
Yeah.
They've made it. And often you'll hear chatter in court cases that sometimes evidence will come out and somebody is, there was something recently there about somebody was threatening somebody and saying, did you see, do you know who I am? If you look at the Sunday World over the last couple of weeks, there I am. Do you know what I mean? So there's a little bit of that as well. We have to be sort of honest about that. Many of them don't want to be exposed. A lot of crime reporting is, because we're so, you know, there's such a heavy kind of legal responsibility here as regards what you say about people, a lot of the crime reporting is on individuals who already have convictions, who've already been before the courts, and we're kind of following the process with them. The exposure of them as who they are has kind of already happened through the court system before they may be named in the Sunday World. That's what the nicknames are all for, before they kind of have those convictions. So it's just, it is a strange world maybe to people on the outside, but It just all floats along.
But when you talk as well about, say, in Finglas at the moment and the situation there, and it's kind of getting into narcos territory, a thing that happened or evolved out of that situation, say, in Mexico and Colombia and other places, was they did begin to target some of the groups you mentioned, the mm-hmm. target police and investigators mm-hmm. and journalists and members of the judiciary. Like, that was the next scaling up, mm-hmm. was that those kind of lines in the sand that were not generally straight over, and they're not. Like, the reason we all know Veronica Guerin's name so well is because of how rare
yeah.
it is. I mean, is that maybe, if not necessarily a fear for yourself, as you say, you don't want to dwell on it, is that your fear of where this naturally goes when you look at other countries, that suddenly they think, you know what, if I think nothing is shooting the local kingpin, I don't think anything is shooting the local guard or detective or judge either.
An interesting question, because, okay, we're a million miles from Mexico. Obviously, it is a complete narco state, as yeah. many of the South American and Central American countries are. I think closer to home, we have a situation in the Netherlands at the moment where there is an individual in prison who, like our own Daniel Kinahan, perhaps started out as a street dealer and within 20 years was a billionaire. Because everybody's taking coke and putting the money into his pocket, yeah. by the way, because, you know, ordinary society are actually turning these people into very powerful billionaires. They don't like them, but, you know, it's the choice you're making when you go out at night and you want to spice up your...
Does that frustrate you?
Yeah, it does frustrate me, very much so, yeah, because I know exactly where that money's going and I know exactly the devastation it causes in so many places and in so many families and... etc. It does frustrate me, in particular the recreational users yeah. of cocaine. Many of them might be living a vegetarian lifestyle to try and save the planet and are considering, you know, a lot. They'd be very educated people and yeah. many of them within my own circle as well. And they would consider, you know, buying a free range egg rather than a barn egg, and they would, you know, buy, you know, organic meat or something, and they want animals to be treated well, and yet they just, there's a disconnect. And I don't know how we break that cycle. It is through education, really, and yeah. perhaps some marketing techniques. But there's a definite disconnect there. But, I mean, what you have in the Netherlands is a guy in prison. You have the murder of a very high-profile journalist, the murder of a criminal lawyer, the murder of the brother of a state witness, all suspected of being carried out by his associates while he's in the highest security prison in the Netherlands. Mm. And you had the Prime Minister under 24-hour protection because of the situation there. And that's much closer to us than Mexico. And, you know, that individual would have had connections with their own Irish mafia. And that's the feeling of... you know, that sense of untouchability that they have, that they develop when they become so empowered and rich and wealthy and, you know, because of the sale of the drugs and the amount yeah. of money that can be made.
As you say, you got into the crime writing space in the wake of Veronica Guerin's death. Like, your early beats, you would have written about anything. That fair? You wrote about politics at different times?
Maybe a little bit. I wouldn't have been great at that now. Maybe a little bit.
Because I was going to ask, yeah. if not crime, is there any other area?
I probably would have been better off going into politics, would I? you know, hindsight is a great thing. I do envy a lot of my colleagues who work for fashion mags and stuff and spend their lives at, you know, fashion shows and quaffing champagne. But... and of course, everything.
They don't get a call to say someone has been shot or.
Exactly. And you know, all the stuff, all this lovely goodies that come into the office.
And yeah.
All we get is a little legal letter or something. but yeah, look, I don't know. I did definitely. I think nothing would have kept me as interested as this has.
Yeah.
And the diversity of journalism, I suppose, as well. I mean, I maybe have a shorter attention span. I think journalism suits people who are a bit like that because you're doing something different every day.
Yeah.
You can concentrate on a particular subject, but it's ever changing, ever moving, and you don't really know what every day brings. But I'm not sure that other aspects of it would have kept me as interested as the crime beat. And then, of course, you can, nowadays we're free to move from the writing into a bit of broadcasting into, you know, documentary making. I like that aspect of it as well. It's really just the same story you're telling. You're hoping to just tell it on a more powerful, in a more powerful way.
So you're not going to be in here as features editor of Vogue or anything in the foreseeable.
Well, I mean, I'm always open to a job offer.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Listen, it's been an absolute pleasure, Nicola. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Kieran.
Nicola Tallant is investigations editor with the Sunday World. Crime World is her podcast. And as I said right at the outset, Clash of the Clans, her book, has updated chapters now. And you can expect more updated chapters at the pace at which that world changes. That's our lot for today's edition of the show. Off the Ball are up next. As always, my thanks to the production team. I will be back tomorrow from 4. Have a great evening, folks.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.